The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from West Babylon, New York, this is Sports Talk 1240.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Sports Talk 1240. I'm Anthony Beers, and I'll be running the show until the 9 o'clock hour. And from then, my man Eric Getzoff will be running the show. He'll be going from 9 to 10. The Mets, they defeated the Phillies today 5-0. Jacob DeGrom pitched a one-hitter. He's the first Mets pitcher to do that since R.A. Dickey. The Yankees, they play the Red Sox tonight at 8 o'clock. That's starting right about now. First pitch will be coming your way shortly. The Sox obviously are up 2-0 in the series. Yankees are holding on by a thread for their season. They're struggling in a very jam-packed AL East. Probably soon to be sellers in the All-Star break trade deadline discussion. But who knows? We got stubborn Steinbrenners on our hands, and we got a Cashman that's looking to sell. But before I get into sports, I wanted to give a shout-out to my man Bill Donahue. He's normally hosting the show in the 8 o'clock hour. I know he's had a tough time of late, and if Bill's listening, that'd be awesome. Bill, obviously, more than welcome to give us a call, and anyone is welcome to give us a call at 631-888-8811. I was hoping to get my man Chris King in here as a guest, but life isn't always how you turn out to be, isn't always what you want it to turn out to be. Chris King is a great guy. If you're an Islanders fan, you have to listen to that call of the Game 7 playoff victory this year if you haven't heard it. I actually was fortunate enough to be at the game myself, so then later when I listened to it on YouTube, he pretty much put me in the exact same state of mind that I was when I witnessed it. So that's a gift to be able to gravitate fans like that. I'm a huge fan of Chris King. He's a Long Island guy, and he's probably the biggest Islander fan out there. So I appreciate you even trying to get on the show, Chris, and because we have the extra time, though, it's not necessarily a bad thing. We can look towards callers. So, again, if you want to call in and get on this discussion, the number is 631-888-8811. We got a ton we got to get to. But, again, before I really delve into the sports, I have to talk about Pokemon Go because it's taking over the world. Okay, I live out east. I'm often in Port Jefferson. It's a small town with too many people, much like many Long Island towns. And this app has kids, young adults, teenagers, little children, and flat-out adults walking around with their phones out trying to catch Pokemon. Now, I don't want to be that old, bitter person that is cynical and that person that no one likes to hang out with and they go, oh, what are they doing? This is stupid. But I can't help but feel like I'm part of Invasion of the Body Snatchers when I see a herd of people gravitating towards catching a Pokemon. And if you're over the age of 40, you probably call it Pokemon, which is, I still think, hysterical. My father calls it Pokemon. So Pokemon Go is just the latest thing in the cyber world where we have phones, we got our Twitter, we got our Facebook, we got our Instagram, we got everything out there to keep us updated in the media world. And the other day I was listening to the Boomer and Carton show, and they had Daryl Strawberry on the show. Obviously, as a supporter of the Mets, I'm a huge fan of Daryl's. He had a tough time with addiction during and especially after his career. That's the whole point of the latest ESPN 30 for 30 that came out. It's called Doc and Daryl. And I think what the 30 for 30 was trying to get at was not only to tell you the truth of what went on in their difficult lives, but how would they be portrayed in today's world? You think about Twitter and Facebook, you think about how easy it is to just rip an athlete immediately. Daryl Strawberry admitted that he tried cocaine when he was 21 on his first road trip. Okay, if that story broke loose in today's world, a 21-year-old playing baseball doing cocaine, there'd be hell to pay. So it's definitely something worth thinking about. At the end of the day, we can only really use theories, but I think that's going to be a major theme of tonight's show. We're going to look from a sociological perspective of then and now. Okay, I wrote a recent article about this, and if you follow me on Twitter, you can check it out. Just follow me at Anthony Beers. I'm Anthony Beers. My Twitter's at Anthony Beers. I got nothing to hide. I got no clever Twitter username. I'm just putting my stuff out there. And recently, I wrote an article on Medium. And if you're a writer, I highly recommend using Medium. It's probably the best software out there. And The title of it is called The Glorification of Professional Athletes, A Tale of Then and Now. I talk about when, you know, obviously it's mostly from the 80s up until now, where I think about sports stars in the 80s and the 90s and 2000s and now. That's the, kind of the whole point of the article. And if that sort of stuff interests you, you should totally check it out. And that's going to be a major, major, major theme of tonight's show. So I mentioned Doc Gooden and Daryl Strawberry. Anyone remember a guy named Lawrence Taylor? He's obviously one of the greatest defensive football players of all time. He needs no introduction. But everybody, and I mean everybody, knows that Lawrence Taylor had trouble with the law, both with drugs, both resisting arrest, womanizing. He even got accused of assault of a girl, a prostitute, underage. Okay, that is something, and that happened in the Twitter era. And nobody cares. People just said, oh, okay, wow, what really happened? And yes, the initial report was a little askew as to what actually happened. I don't really feel like getting into the details because it's too despicable for me to really feel like talking about. But the fact that he overcame that and you still see people wearing number 56 at every single Giants game you go to, I just think that's fascinating. Okay, and we talk about today, obviously, a big story of a guy who had a lot of drug issues, never had the success, you know, only in college, not in professional, is Johnny Manziel. So I feel that maybe in today's world, like let's say Johnny Manziel, even though he had this drug issue, stayed in the league and continued to do well. Let's say people didn't care as much, like let's say the 80s. Let's say he was able to overcome all the crimes and the despicable acts that he's done. And let's say he goes on to do well. In the 80s, no one would care. But in today's world, when Johnny Manziel is a Twitter, he even tweets at people, he's definitely in need of some help. Everybody knows that. But my point is, would these stars like Daryl, Doc, LT, anyone else you can really think of, Lenny Dykstra, Keith Hernandez, anyone on the Mets that wasn't Mookie Wilson or Gary Carter, would they have been hung out to dry before they really got the chance? It's worth thinking about. At the end, of course, we can only speculate, but let's just look at today's world. You got Kevin Durant, okay? Kevin Durant recently obviously being eviscerated for choosing to leave the Oklahoma City Thunder and go to the Golden State Warriors. That was a doozy. That's definitely not something I'm happy about as a basketball fan. I don't like seeing the same teams every year. I mean, if you ask me, I'd say it's a pretty great chance that it's going to be the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Golden State Warriors in the finals again next year. And there's no parity in that. And even the commissioner of the NBA, Adam Silver, said that he thought that's bad for the league. Okay? So, yes, he did something that affects the sport and alters people's personas. But he did not commit a crime. He didn't do anything morally or ethically wrong. He just chose to do something that a lot of people think is not too cool. That's really it. Okay? He's getting killed. Just look at his Twitter. I don't encourage people to be on Twitter for too long, but if you look at the comments, you look what people say to him, it's absurd. At the end of the day, he went to play for another team. And if you ask me, the real problem behind Kevin Durant leaving Oklahoma City is not that he left, okay? He's a free agent in a free country. How mad can you be at a person for exhibiting their rights to be free? Yes, I'm not happy that he's a member of the Golden State Warriors, but I will not crucify the man for exhibiting his rights as a free agent. Anybody can do that. And the Warriors lost a lot on their bench. This was a big signing for them. So I'm not going to kill Kevin Durant, even though I don't support his decision. It doesn't have to be like you don't agree with Kevin Durant. You got to kill him. There can be a safe middle ground. There often can be. In the media today, it seems everything's either on the left or on the right. You either hate it or you love it. There's nothing is ever this mutually exclusive. You can be upset with Kevin Durant's decision, but not fault him for it. The real issue to me is that he feels, okay, and this is not just him. This was LeBron a few years ago. This is Carmelo Anthony today. This is Chris Paul today. He felt that without a ring, his legacy was nothing. He felt that he'll always be overlooked because he never got a ring. Okay, I'm a Knicks fan. If I see Patrick Ewing, I'm taking a bow. That man is a god. He doesn't have a ring. You don't need a ring. That is such a falsehood in sports. Now, does it improve your legacy? I guess, but rings to me are an ode to a team. You don't just get a ring because you got one. You get a ring because we got one. Kevin Durant was a game away from going to the NBA Finals last year, and he probably felt that was their closest opportunity to do it, and they still couldn't do it, even up 3-1 against the Warriors. Now, it's extremely awkward that he joined the team that beat him, really kind of worse than what LeBron did, in my opinion, in 2010. But I'm not going to, you know, back in 2010, I was a high school kid, I was killing LeBron. I'm not going to be that way now. I'd like to think I've matured a little bit in 6 years. I don't like Durant's decision. I actually think it's worse than LeBron's, but I'm not going to kill him like I killed LeBron, but because I think I understand the situation a little better these days. I feel that Kevin Durant cares so much about what people think about him that he weighed out his options. He said, okay, so obviously he's sitting before free agency, before the 4th of July, where he made his decision. He's sitting there thinking, if I go to the Golden State Warriors, I'm going to get killed. I'm going to get killed when I go back to Oklahoma City. Fans that wore my shirt may even burn them. He knew that was coming because he saw it with LeBron. And he did it anyway. And the fact that he was willing to do it tells you what he was willing to sacrifice just to get a ring. And that was ultimately his decision, but that's a product of us people. That's a product of us pushing our athletes and saying, you're nothing unless you get a ring. Let me tell you right now, I'd rather have the guy that gave it his all and fell short, but the one that I could still call my guy. And by my guy, I mean a sports fan. I'm a Knicks fan, okay? Kristaps Porzingis, I want to be a Knick for life. I want to be my guy. I want the team to build around him, and they have, and we'll get to that. We'll get to some Knicks basketball. But that's just crazy to me. And I want to expand on my thoughts on Kevin Durant and athletes in the media today compared to then. Kevin Durant didn't even commit a crime. You would think he did, by the way things are going at it. Again, if you want to join the discussion, the call-in number is 631-888-8811. This is Sports Talk 1240. I'm Anthony Beers, and I just can't sit here and listen to this lie anymore. And the lie is this fallacy that people believe that athletes have a job or a duty to be role models. I think that's the most ridiculous thing. And pretty much every sports fan, every person in media thinks that. Why does an athlete have to be a role model? A long time ago, Charles Barkley, everyone thinks he's a knucklehead, but sometimes he's right. And a long time ago when Charles Barkley was a player, he said, thinking an athlete is a role model is ridiculous. He says, your uncle's a role model. Your grandma's a role model. Your parents are role models. Your brother's a role model. Your sister's a role model. You don't, and what he meant by that was you don't actually know these people. So quite literally, they're not role models. But I'm not just going to use it as an excuse for vocabulary. I think people associate themselves through athletes for the good, and then when they do something bad, they just disattach themselves. I think it's a psychology. You think about sports fans, all right? A sports fan on a Monday sees his or her team win on a Sunday, and they wear a shirt on a Monday when they win. Next week they lose, they don't wear the shirt on Monday. That is a psychological pattern. That is an association when they win and a disassociation when they lose. That is 100% a thing. I'm not a psychologist, so forgive me if I come across as a little ridiculous, but I think there is a certain psychology and certain social patterns to sports fans. So I'm not going to kill Kevin Durant, and I'm not going to even kill athletes that do something horrific. I don't know them. You see something despicable I've used the word despicable like 3 times. I got to stop doing that. I'm going to work on a new word, so bear with me if you've noticed that. I apologize. But when people do something horrific in the news, obviously a big one today is domestic violence. Big no-no, okay? I obviously don't condone that in any way. The fact that I have to articulate that is actually sad, but I obviously don't condone domestic violence in any way. But if you see something like that, there's no point in hanging him by a stick. We don't need to go Lord of the Flies on somebody. The only positive thing you could say in the situation is, wow, that's horrific. I hope he gets help. I hope that person that did something awful gets help. If you say anything else, you're just part of the commotion. You're just part of the blob. You're just part of the sound. Take a step back. You don't know the person. Now, people, cranky people on sports radio call in because, you know, I want to get to Jose Reyes. Jose Reyes obviously has been impactful with the Mets lately, and he's back in the leadoff role, and he's in it with the Mets in the hopes of them coming back in the NL East. And a short time ago, he was charged with domestic violence. He was ultimately released by the Colorado Rockies. They're still paying his salary. The Mets picked him up for cheap. They were desperate for offense, and he's a leadoff hitter. He's continuing to go to counseling. He's apologized for his actions. He's really done all the right things he could possibly do at this point since the incident. So, obviously what Jose Reyes did was horrible, but there's no point in just piling on. Encourage him to get help. I mean, there's a good quote I like, okay? Every saint has a past, and every sinner has a future. Jose Reyes did something bad. Is he a horrible person for the rest of his life? Let's just take a step back. I mean, if you want to hate him, fine. You have the right to hate him. I don't even care. I just think that in the world of sports, it's silly to get that upset over anyone you don't actually know. And not just in sports, in politics, public figures, anything. So I'm not going to kill Jose Reyes, and it's not just because I'm a Mets fan. I didn't say anything about Aroldis Chapman either. So if you're going to pull that card, you better shut it, because I am the furthest thing from a Yankee fan, and I did not say anything about the Yankees choosing to get Aroldis Chapman. I actually thought it was a good business decision. They get their bullpen is one of the few great things about that team, and honestly, they're probably going to trade Chapman and get somebody good in the future. So the Yankees, they absolutely hustled the situation. Now, back to the topic of role models. I noticed the other night on the ESPYs, we had Carmelo Anthony, Dwayne Wade, LeBron James, and Chris Paul come out and give an introductory speech about the shootings between the Black Lives Matters extremists, I guess we can call that lunatic, and the cops that were killed and the innocent people that have died from police shootings. And quite frankly, I don't really want to get into the sides of it. I just want to point out that they felt the need to say something about those issues. These are basketball players. These are basketball stars. Okay, obviously, they have nothing actually to do with these issues. But Carmelo Anthony felt strongly that as an athlete, their voices need to be heard. They need to help. And they come out and they do this whole spiel that the violence has to stop. No one should get shot. No one should be killed. And it was a noble thing to say. But to me, it's not outlandish in any way to say shooting should stop. That's what everybody's trying to say. That's why everyone's having a conniption every time we see one of these damn shootings. So, I'm not going to criticize what they did because they didn't do anything wrong. But they didn't say anything truly significant. What they said isn't going to make a difference. What they said was ethically right, okay? And that's not something to criticize. It's a non-story. It's indifferent. So they come out there thinking they have to be role models. And LeBron James mentions that it was the ESPYs. They paid a big tribute to Muhammad Ali, who passed away recently this year. He struggled from Parkinson's and a lot of post-boxing issues. Also old age. He's no longer with us. And LeBron James said, obviously, we have to tribute the GOAT in Muhammad Ali, and he obviously would speak up. So, I see what he's getting at. I see what LeBron James is trying to say. But I think it's a bit different. Everybody should think what LeBron James, Carmelo Anthony, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Paul said. If you don't, you're part of the problem. If you don't think innocent people shouldn't die, there's something wrong with you. Okay? And that's ultimately all they said. So we're talking about athletes being role models. These guys can't say anything that off the grain because LeBron James in particular is part of the billion-dollar sneaker empire in his endorsements. I mean, think about it. We have Nike, and then we have Michael Jordan, we have the Air Jordans, and then within those Air Jordans, we have the LeBrons, the Carmelos, the Chris Pauls, and Dwayne Wades. Funny enough, all four of those players have their own sneaker deal through Jordan. Jordan famously once said Republicans buy sneakers too, when he was asked whether or not why he doesn't share his political opinions. That's what he said. So that's how Jordan felt. Jordan never spoke out about much about anything. He was just a basketball player. And to be fair, there's nothing wrong with that. But I think it's a bit of a stretch to say that these people are role models and should be saying politically accurate things in society. Now, don't get me wrong. I don't have a problem with an athlete that wants to speak out. I certainly don't have a problem with Muhammad Ali being vocal. I listen to some of his speeches today. I get goosebumps. Now, Muhammad Ali, when he spoke out against the war, against acts of race, against racial acts of how they were managing the war, how he refused to be drafted, do you think that left Muhammad Ali in a very, very positive perspective? People that liked Muhammad Ali, it was divided. There are many people that felt that the war in Vietnam was justified and that when you're called to be drafted, you have to go. There are many people that thought what he did was cowardly. Now, your opinion, to each their own, that's not really the point. The point is, Muhammad Ali didn't care about being liked. He said that. He's said before in press conferences that, yes, you're hurting a few dollars yourself, but you're helping millions by speaking the truth and speaking out. When you're under these major endorsement deals, you can't speak out. When you're under the lens of Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and radio and television and internet and Sirius and interviews before the game, interviews during the game, interviews after the game, you get the point. When you're under that insane microscope and you do something slightly aggravating to anyone, you're going to get so much flack for it that it could destroy a person mentally. So we live in a crazy world. We live in a world where you have to be careful about saying the simplest things. Now, I don't want to live that way. I don't want to have to worry about backlash. The other day I made a joke on Twitter. An innocent joke. I saw the Wimbledon. It was Serena Williams. Now, I'll admit right now, I'm not a huge Serena Williams fan. I'm not a huge Serena Williams hater. I'm not a huge supporter of tennis. I don't care that much. Serena Williams obviously has had a ton of success, and she's someone a lot of people look up to, okay? And I learned a lot more about her after what happened to me on Twitter. I said, would anyone be surprised if Serena Williams was on steroids? I was like, how exactly do they really go about the testing? That's what I really want to know. I understand Maria Sharapova got in trouble for quote-unquote PED, some sort of anti-anxiety medication. It's very weird. She might have had 5 warnings. The reports are weird, okay? I looked through a lot of them. So I say something innocently about Serena Williams, thinking of it as a joke, not really hoping to offend anybody. And then I have an army of people in saying what I said was racially wrong. What? What does it have to do with anything? It doesn't have anything to do with anything. I'll answer that question for you right now. So my point is, now I could care less about the people that were tweeting at me, but I had to delete it eventually because it was getting excessive and it was getting downright mean and personal and so disrespectful that I really don't want to get into it. I just want to make a point that me, a Joe Schmo, making an innocent tweet, felt that distress. Now, if you're a famous person and you have a Twitter, I can't even imagine the amount of inflated contacts from people you don't know, either calling you out, saying how much they love you. Both are weird, by the way, constantly. I mean, I mentioned Kevin Durant before. I mean, look at his Twitter. Read the comments. It's absurd. Muhammad Ali, obviously, back in the day, was not liked in what he said, but he never had Twitter. He never was able to speak. He did have Twitter later in his life, but he never, when he was ultimately in his prime and famous and a major civil rights activist, he didn't have Twitter. And I'm sure if he did, a lot of people wouldn't have liked what he said, and he wouldn't have cared. That's what makes him so powerful in today's world. So if you want to be a sports figure or a public figure that people know, you have to not care what people think. You have to accept the fact that some people are just going to hate you for the things you say. Now, I think it's inherently in all of us to be well-liked. I do. So you see Carmelo Anthony and Dwayne Wade, LeBron James, and Chris Paul. I truly think they want to be liked. And I truly think they're more marketable if they are well-liked. So it's not just a personal warm fuzzy feeling when people like you. It's a financial reason. So saying that these people are speaking out and doing the right thing is just it's whacked, man. It's crazy. So the next time you see someone or you hear someone say, "Oh, you know what? Sports people are idols. I look up to them. They have a duty because kids look up to them." Just just tell them they're wrong. Tell them they got it all wrong. Tell them that's a fallacy. I hope I've sold you on that argument. Now, I was listening to Hahn and Humpty the other day, and I'm a huge fan of that show as well. Boomer Carton and Hahn and Humpty are easily my two favorite shows on radio. I do like the Michael Kay show as well, but those two are my favorite. And Rick DiPietro, who I find has done a great job in the media world, especially because he wasn't a very well-liked Islander towards the end of his career. The contract, people always look at that contract and ripped him for it. So, personally, I was a DiPietro fan when he was younger, but injuries derailed his career and the Islanders sat on that horrible contract. It's more the Islanders' fault than it is his, but of course, in today's world, he gets killed for it. He always thinks outside the box, and that's why I'm a fan of his. And he mentioned owners, okay? He said, if owners won't ever speak out on their opinions as on their opinions of their athletes, excuse me. Let me rephrase that. Do you think owners like it when athletes say something against the grain? Something that may offend a fan. Someone that may say, well, you know what, I don't want to see that person or this player or this team another night. The answer is, of course they don't. They're trying to run a business. They're not trying to run a business. They're trying to run an empire, I should say. So if owners are never going to get behind what ESPN and everyone from the ESPYs was trying to say, we have to make a difference, we have to do this, I mean, it's just baloney. The fact that people sit there and consume that and think, wow, what a noble thing, it's just baloney. And again, I don't want to be the cynic. I don't want to be the guy. I guess that maybe that should be the theme of the show, is me trying not to be a cynic. I'll try and pitch that one for you before we take a break here in a few moments. But I was very disgruntled with the whole ESPY's portrayal. I get that they do a lot of good things. I get that they take a lot of money for charity. I get that they do auctions. I think all that is excellent. Of course I do. But this whole, like, this, we're politically correct, we do all this, and we have to show the right thing, we have to say the right thing, do the right thing. It's not about society, it's about money. If you don't think that, you're wrong. You're drinking the Kool-Aid. If you think they're trying to make a societal difference, yes, they're helping the cancer stuff. I totally respect them for the Jimmy V Foundation. I'm a huge fan of Jim Valvano myself. But to me, all of that other fluff is just that, fluff. When we come back, we're going to start talking about other leagues in the digital era, how they're going to really go on, if the quality of the sport has derailed, if it hasn't. We're going to talk about the Knicks acquisitions, we're going to talk about the Islanders, the Mets, and we're going to talk about All-Star Games. So don't go anywhere, and please, if you want to call us, 631-888-8811. I really hope we get at least one caller, because I've said the number like 3 times.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240 on Long Island's AM 1240. WGBB.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Want to advertise your business on Sports Talk 1240? Place an ad on sportstalk1240.com and run a radio commercial during the show every Sunday night here on AM 1240 WGBB. Our rates are very affordable. We'll even produce the radio commercial for you. Just head over to sportstalk1240.com and fill out the Contact Us form and let us start promoting your business today.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gust Buster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit GustBuster.com and get your Gust Buster today.
Stay connected to Sports Talk 1240 by following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Sports Talk 1240, everybody. I'm your host, Anthony Beers. In a half hour, we're going to have Eric Getzoff wrapping up the show from 9 to 10. We've discussed athletes. I've discussed a lot of philosophies. I hope I haven't bored you, because don't worry, we're going to get to the sports stuff too. I just really wanted to get that off my chest. That's the best thing about radio, especially when you're alone. You can get stuff off your chest. Please call us. Please talk about this with me. 631-888-8811. Anybody, seriously anybody, give us a call. Next topic we're going to get into is the Knicks. Obviously, if you want to talk about something we did previously talk about in the show, by all means, bring it up. Roll with me. It's all good. But I got to talk Knicks basketball because I haven't gotten on the radio since the Knicks have made a ton of acquisitions. Okay, the bigger ones, obviously, are Joakim Noah, Brandon Jennings, and Derrick Rose. I also got Courtney Lee, and they got more than just that. But those are the four big pieces of this new-look New York Knicks team. Now, that's a pretty cool-looking poster with Derrick Rose, Courtney Lee, Joakim Noah, Carmelo Anthony, and Kristaps Porzingis. The more likely going to be the starting five. Now, when you support the New York Knicks, you take everything with a grain of salt. You take even Phil Jackson, the 11-ring mastermind who is now the president of them, you take every decision he makes with a grain of salt. It's just programmed into you as Knicks fans, especially ever since James Dolan has bought a serious interest in the team. So, you look at Noah, you look at Jennings, you look at Rose. Three guys that are going to have to be key players for the Knicks next year. You think one thing. You think injuries. Injuries. You think about the four knee surgeries that Rose has had. You think about the multitude of injuries that Noah has had. And you think about the fact that Brandon Jennings only played 25 games last year. Now, Rose, to most people's surprise, played 66 games last year. Noah played 29. The career numbers are good. All of them. Derrick Rose, 19.7 points per game career. The guy can flat out score. When he's healthy and when he's playing, he's a stud. It's just a very big if he can stay healthy. 6.2 assists per game's career, 3.7 rebounds per game career. From a point guard, you really can't ask for much more well-rounded numbers. Sure, his jump shot is something to be desired, but the guy can drive to the lane, and the Knicks have shooters. It's not a real substantial issue right now. Noah will be the anchor of this team, and he will protect Porzingis. That is his goal. That was the best thing about what the Knicks did in this offseason. They built around Kristaps Porzingis. He's the future of this team. He's everything. Anyone that scratches him should get fouled hard on the next one. Okay, he is the team. Sorry, Melo. It's late in your career. I think you know it at this point. He's even said it himself. We need to build around Kristaps Porzingis. Brandon Jennings' career numbers, 15.5 points per game, 5.9 assists per game, 3.1 rebounds per game. Joakim Noah's career numbers, 9.3 points per game, 3 assists per game, 9.4 rebounds per game. You may think Noah's numbers aren't that impressive, but he's a 10-10 guy. He'll get you blocks. He'll get you rebounds. He'll be the guy that your team loves to have. The guy that you're so glad you don't have to go against if you're the opposing team center. So now the next question is, now that the Knicks have made their moves, they're putting their pieces together. By the way, quick shout out to Langston Galloway. He's not going to be a Knick next year. He was one of my favorites. He was just one of those guys you love. He reminded me of John Starks because he came from nothing and really built his legacy. He signed in New Orleans. Obviously, the Knicks were fortunate to keep Lance Thomas, the other Starksy type of guy, D-League player. But go Langston Galloway. Do very well, unless, of course, you're playing the Knicks. That's the only asterisk to that point. But now, if you're a Knicks fan, you got to be wondering, how much did we improve, and how much did other teams improve? Last year, the Knicks finished 13th in the Eastern Conference. They finished that low. They were only better than the Nets and Sixers. That is really something, considering how much of a good start this team had. They were thinking playoffs at the beginning of last year. So you see how quickly a season go off the rails. So you don't want to be that naive fan again that's drinking the Kool-Aid. But if you look at the teams that were ahead of the Knicks last year, let's go up into the 8th seed. Bucks, Magic, Wizards, Bulls, and then the Pistons were 8th. So, you look at all these teams now, you think it's going to be very different. The only team that's really guaranteed not to be better or worse is probably Cleveland. They're still going to be awesome. Now, the Hawks got Dwight Howard. The Hawks finished 4th last year. Dwight Howard can be good or bad. We know that. He can put up good numbers, but he's not necessarily a great team guy. He's from Atlanta. He wanted to go home. I think he'll do well. I think the Hawks will still be a tough team to beat. Now, the Celtics got insanely good. They signed Al Horford, and that's a huge signing for the Celtics. The Celtics finished with 48 wins last year. Do people realize this? The Celtics had 48 wins last year, and they finished fifth. And that's because the Hawks and Heat, both ahead of them, also had 48 wins. The Heat are disoriented, obviously, because Dwayne Wade's leaving and going to Chicago. So that is weird. Chicago, on the other hand, also lost Noah and Rose. So I think Chicago and the Chicago Bulls and the Miami Heat are both going to be lesser teams next year. So that's something to be concerned about. So Pacers, question mark. Hornets, question mark. Pistons, question mark. Wizards, question mark. I think the Knicks definitely got better. There's no doubt about it. But the question is how much better? In the East, everyone knows you don't have to be royalty to make the playoffs. 44-38, the Pistons were at the 8th seed, okay? Can they finish with 45 wins? I don't think it's asking too much. It's just a matter of how many games they're healthy for. If Derrick Rose is healthy for 66 games this year, that's an incredibly good thing. Because the Knicks haven't had a point guard. You have to keep in mind how much better the Knicks are just for not having Jose Calderon. No offense to the guy personally. He just was killing us, especially on defense. So, Calderon, he's out of the picture. Derek Williams, he's out of the picture. Aaron Aflalo, I think that was the biggest guy that had to go. He just was not getting it, not playing well as a teammate. So, I think the Knicks, the guys that needed to go, went, minus Galloway. And the guys that could help us are here. So even that negative thing in the back of my mind as a Knicks fan, I think, well, you know what? Looking pretty good. It can't get much worse. The bar has never really been lower from Phil Jackson's standpoint. So we'll hope things work out in the Knicks world. Obviously, the Islanders made a ton of moves. The biggest one is getting Andrew Ladd. He got a huge contract, but he's that other stud that can play with John Tavares, and that is something that is going to have to be seen. A lot of Islander fans are concerned that Kyle Okposo is gone, Matt Martin is gone, and Franz Nielsen is gone. Franz Nielsen probably got the best deal of the three. Franz Nielsen went to the Detroit Red Wings. He'll be able to do well in Detroit. Matt Martin went to Toronto. He's a Canadian dude, so good for him. And Kyle Okposo went to Buffalo. He's going to rejoin Matt Molson, his buddy, that was a former Islander as well. So they might not be in the worst situation. They probably knew it was coming. But Islander fans that fell in love with this team this year, they were a playoff team. I don't know if we can really worry about where they're going to be and what's going on. So, Franz Nielsen, as an Islander fan, I never really thought that he would be an amazing playoff player. He's not a physical player by any means, and when you play in the NHL playoffs, it's just a different game. So, Kyle Okposo, he could definitely play physically, but he was so streaky that I don't think he would have been worth any money, the money that he was going to get from someone else. The guy who I wish we could have signed is Matt Martin. $10 million? Come on. We could have signed Martin. We could have kept the fourth line together. We kept Clutterbuck, though, and I think it's going to be fun when Clutterbuck and Martin start hitting each other. Maybe they'll start fighting. But it'll also be a little sad because they were such buddies. They were the EMC squared line, obviously, with Casey Cizikas, Matt Martin, and Kyle Clutterbuck. But I don't know. But the Islanders, they made a lot of good signings. Again, the biggest one they made was Ladd. I think the Islanders kind of broke even. I think what they have to do, what Garth Snow has to do, is trade a goalie. This team has a lot of goalies. Whether you like Halak or whether you like Greiss. Personally, I like Greiss. Personally, he's my favorite goalie on the squad. Or whether you like Berube, one of them's got to be traded. You can't have three goalies. It's crazy. So, and you could get a lot for pretty much any of them. And when I say a lot, I don't mean someone that makes an immediate impact this year. I'm saying someone that could possibly be a draft pick. So we'll see what the Islanders decide to do. I feel strongly that they have to trade a goalie. But I also feel strongly that the Islanders are headed in the right direction. The Rangers, you can never completely write them off because they have Henrik Lundqvist. But are they really, really headed in the right direction? They haven't made a lot of noise. They have their best years are probably behind them. They still were unable to win that Stanley Cup. I think the Rangers are on the decline and the Islanders are on the way up. Maybe that one playoff series for the first time in 23 years is what's building my optimism. But hey, We'll see. The Mets. Okay, if you're a Mets fan, you've probably torn your hair out. You probably glued it back on. You've probably fainted. You've probably jumped for joy. This season has been an absolute roller coaster, and it's entirely because of the multitude of injuries this team has had. DeGrom gave us a gem today. That was awesome. We saw a home run from Granderson. We saw a home run from Asdrubal Cabrera. Can the Mets pass the Nationals? With Daniel Murphy ruining our lives, it's not really something that I can see. It's possible. I've seen stranger things happen. I've lived through the 07 Mets. I've lived through the 2008 Mets. If you lived through those seasons, you know that no lead is safe. This is baseball. If you're not mathematically eliminated, it ain't over. So, realistically, though, I'm not sure the Mets can actually pass the Nationals. Head-to-head, the Nationals have done very well against the Mets. They're 9-4 against the Mets this year. It's hard for me to really visualize that sort of change. So, then you look at the wild card. And now the wild card is such a mess in baseball today. I hate the one-game wild card. I think it's a disgrace that because you just face an ace and then you're done. You know, a pitching staff is what's supposed to make a team, not just one pitcher. So right now, if the season had ended at the All-Star break, the Mets would have had to face the Marlins in a one-game playoff. They would have faced Jose Fernandez, a guy they can't touch, and they'd be toast. So in terms of the Mets and their playoff situation, it's not great right now. Syndergaard has to overcome this arm pain, bone spurs, whatever it was. It was very weird how he left that Nationals game this year. Mats has done okay, but not great lately. He's not been himself. He's clearly also going through pain, but we need him. There's rumors they might trade back for John Neese. Yeah, they can always use the left-handed pitcher. They brought up Conforto back up today. If Conforto can be impactful, that'll definitely help the lineup. But the optimistic Mets fan view has got to be if they've withstand so many injuries, if they've withstood all the Murphy abuse, and they're still where they are right now, and that's right in the picture, right behind the mighty Nats, they've got something positive to look at. The only thing that they have to do at this point is take care of business when they're playing the Nats. Obviously, they still got to play ball. There's other teams they got to play. I'm not trying to sound stupid. I'm just saying I believe that if the Mets take care of business against the Nats head-to-head, everything's going to be all right. The Yankees, sell the team. Clean house. Do the anti-Yankee thing. Yankee fans don't get it. Some Yankee fans do. But I just feel like there's this notion among Yankee fans that no matter what the situation is, they think they can still win and they can still come out of it. Okay, we're knocking on the door of August. It's officially the later end of July. And your team is not in a great situation. In the grand scheme of things, if you compare them to National League teams, they're probably not that bad. But their starting pitching has been up and down. Their lineup is so old and injured. Their relief pitching is great, but they just don't have it. They don't have the pieces to compete right now. They're paying these monstrous contracts. This is something they should have saw coming. Cashman knows what's the deal is. He's got to clean house. He's got to make trades. And if cranky Hal Steinbrenner can give him the green light, then the Yankees will probably be in good shape in a few years. 2 years maybe. You can't never really call the Yankees out of it, but for the love of God, let it go. Let it go, like Frozen. Just let it go. Season's nothing. And if you're like me, and I love baseball, I love basketball, I love hockey, I love all we talked about, but if you're like me, this time of year, you get the itch. And the itch, meaning football, knocking on the door, that thump, thump, thump. Football is around the corner. Now, the New York Giants have made a ton of moves, especially in free agency. They had a solid draft. Not too sure about Eli Apple in the first round, but no one is. We'll see. Maybe he'll be good. You don't want to kill a guy you've never seen play. And then you look at the free agent signings, Damon Harrison, Janoris Jenkins, and obviously Vernon. Olivier Vernon is the big one. Now, they're all overpaid, all of them. But that's just the nature of the business. You want to make a big free agent signing, you basically have to overpay him. Giants are in a situation to do so. So everyone sees these headlines, and all these Giant fans go, wow, we're going to be great next year. We're going to be so good. Now, I say take a step back, okay? I don't think that's wrong to think the Giants might be good next year. I think it's obviously understandable. But to me, when you fire a head coach that's been there for so long, and I get it, it was Tom Coughlin's time to go. I don't think it was handled in the best way. It should have happened this year, no doubt. But I don't think it was handled the best way. Because in today's world, if you go 6-10 twice, you're fired. Period. I mean, he went 7-9, 6-10, 6-10. Was it all his fault? No, of course not. But in any football situation, when you are under 500, 3 years in a row, you're fired. And that's just the way it is. There are guys that get fired for making the playoffs 2 years in a row but not winning a playoff game. John Gruden went 9-7 2 years in a row, and he got fired. It's a tough, tough game to stay a coach of. And Tom Coughlin coaches teams since 2004. Now, most Giants fans love Tom Coughlin, but some Giants fans had that crankiness. They're probably co-Giant Yankee fans. Those are the ones that always complain. But they didn't like the fact that he had ran shotgun draws. He was conservative. He put his hands on his hips. He punted all the time. He was Coughlin-y in a lot of ways. Now, I don't care about any of that stuff. Obviously, during the course of a game, you may hear a murmur from me here and there. But I think Coughlin managed the game fairly well. Solid, I would say. He's not a brilliant in-game coach, but he prepares well. And the best thing about him, okay, the thing that I think we're going to miss, and when I say we, I mean the Giants. Yes, I believe Giants Blue. I am part of that fraternity. What we're going to miss is Tom Coughlin's leadership of turning boys into men. Odell Beckham, he did some childish things. Tom Coughlin always says the right thing and helps him. You want to get on him for that stupid Panthers game? I really don't care. I think that's ridiculous to think Tom Coughlin was supposed to bench him in that game. I think it's absurd. His career was on the line, and he's your best receiver. Oh, he shots to the head. Yeah, well, Norman was just as guilty. And get ready for that battle. That's going to be fun. Norman's on the Redskins now. I'm actually looking forward to it. I think it's going to be fun. So what we're going to miss, I got a little off track there, but what we're going to miss with Tom Coughlin is the fact that he put the heart and soul into this team. He led. He was a father figure to everybody. I mean, when people left the Giants, or when Tom Coughlin, his career was done with the Giants this year, everybody that once played for him spoke up. Eli Manning, the stone face epitome of the NFL, the guy that hardly ever smiles and hardly ever frowns, had a quivering lip and tears in his eyes as Coughlin was leaving. And I said before, I don't think the Giants handled it in the best way, and I'm not saying that means I definitely think Reese should have been fired. I think that if you were going to fire Coughlin, that you have to fire Reese as well. So in a way, maybe that is what I'm saying, but I felt that they either kept both of them or they fired both of them. It's like a half-assed thing to do one and not the other. So, I think Reese has done an okay job this offseason, but here's what I don't like. Because everyone knows that Reese is on the hot seat, he has to overpay guys, he has to be aggressive, he has to make moves, and the backlash that the team could suffer from in terms of salary cap may not affect him if the team isn't good this year and he gets fired. And the other thing is, Ben McAdoo, okay, great X's and O's guy, seems like a hard worker. He's only been in the NFL 14 years. This is his first year as a head coach. There's no guarantee he's going to be a great coach. I like Ben McAdoo. I have nothing against him. But he has shown us nothing as a head coach. How many guys out there are good coordinators but not great head coaches? Buddy Ryan just passed away. He was a great, great, great defensive coordinator. The 85 Bears, that is the reference of the best defense of all time. Head coach, 500 record. His sons, Rex and Rob. Well, mostly Rex in terms of being a head coach, 500. It's hard to be a head coach. It's hard to take. There's so many things that can go wrong in a football game, and the coach has to take the blame for all of them, and that's what happened. That's what Coughlin said to Eli. Goes, I know, I get it. I get that I take the heat for everything. That's what he was saying. So, I'm not going to kill the guy. I don't know who he is. But Ben McAdoo is a question mark. Steve Spagnuolo is also a question mark. Yes, he's got players now, but if he doesn't provide this year, it's going to be trouble. So it's either A, the Giants reestablish the tradition, they become the players, they become the team that everyone wants them to be, and they make the playoffs, and they overcome the Redskins or the Cowboys, maybe even the Eagles, you never know, but I'm going to go with probably not in terms of the Eagles being in the picture. But we'll see. That's what you have to say, and that's what's not fun to say when you're in sports radio or when you're on TV or when you're ready for football. You have to say, we'll see. Ben McAdoo, I'm excited to watch his offense. I think Sterling Shepard is going to make a great impact with the team. I think Victor Cruz being healthy would be an amazing plus, but that's another thing you have to wait and see and be like, oh, God, I hope so. But I think the Giants are in a good situation. Now you go, you know, I'd say across the river, but they play in the same place. You talk about the Jets. The Jets are a mess right now. Huge that they just signed Muhammad Wilkerson. And I think defensively they can be good. And I love Todd Bowles. I think he's a great coach. I think he says all the right things. I think he understands that the team has to be. I think he's a big reason that last year Ryan Fitzpatrick had the best year of his career. Because he knew what he was supposed to do. But there's one thing that Todd Bowles did wrong. And it's ultimately affecting everything in this offseason. Because everyone says, are they going to sign Fitzpatrick or not? If they win that last game in Buffalo, or at home for that matter, but if they win that last game in Buffalo, they're winning. They're going to the playoffs. Fitzpatrick is signed. Everything's fine and dandy in Jets world right now. They'd miss Snacks Harrison, sure, but they'd be all right because they signed Mo and they keep Fitz. So, obviously, that's not what's going on right now. And Fitzpatrick is not signed with the team because they didn't win that game in Buffalo. And you know what the game plan was in that Buffalo? And this is on Todd Bowles, big time. You know how many times they ran with Chris Ivory in that game? They don't even have Chris Ivory anymore. But in that game, Chris Ivory was a huge part of their team. They're in Buffalo, the coldest, nastiest, windiest, tough, one of the toughest places to play. They're facing Rex. Rex is living for this. This is his entire life's fulfillment to be a troll to the Jets now. And they pass the ball 40 times, 40 plus times with Ryan Fitzpatrick and only run it 6 times with Chris Ivory. Have you lost your mind? The game was never too out of hand for you to stop running the football. You didn't get blown out. You were in that game. The Jets defense played honorably. Instead, you asked Fitzpatrick to do something he had never done the entire year. And he did what the old Ryan Fitzpatrick did, and that was throw interceptions in the red zone. You forgot who you were in that game, Todd Bowles, and I'm sure he'll be the first one to admit that. And it has drastically altered everything in Jets world since. And if you're a Jets fan and you say, oh, Hackenberg, let's see. Bryce Petty, let's see. Well, maybe, but before that, it's Geno. So if you don't sign Fitzpatrick, you're starting Geno Smith. If you're starting Geno Smith, you're just waiting for him to mess up so you put in Hackenberg or Petty. Probably Petty. In sports, it's good to have competition. I think it's great that when guys struggle, like in baseball, Conforto struggled, he got sent down. He had to figure it out and he came back. I think that's good for sports. You're not producing, son. Sit down. Have a seat. I think that's great. But in the NFL and football in general, when you have a multitude of quarterbacks, it's not necessarily good. Now, fans are always going to outcry to see someone else when someone is struggling. Okay? I'm sure somewhere before Brady's legacy, I'm sure there was a drunk Patriot fan somewhere saying, take Brady out. I'm sure it happened at some point. You can say the same thing about any football god ever. But in Jets world, you're going to see that a lot more. So Geno Smith, who has proven nothing, would have to play great for there to be no call for the next guy. No pressure to put him in. I think Todd Bowles can handle that pressure well. Rex Ryan obviously proved that he couldn't with Mark Sanchez and Tim Tebow and Greg McElroy and that just revolving door of mediocrity. That's what Jets fans don't understand. The franchise isn't defined. It's not clear. It should be clear. When Brett Favre was with the Packers, the next guy was Aaron Rodgers. and they wanted to put in Rodgers, and that's why they had to trade Favre to the Jets. It was clear they had a plan. Is Bryce Petty the Jets' plan? They got him in the fourth round. Is Christian Hackenberg the Jets' plan? They overdrafted for him in the second round. Geno Smith was the Jets' plan, and they want nothing to do with him now. You can see it. So if you're a Jets fan and you say, eh, screw Ryan Fitzpatrick, let's go with Geno, you're nuts. And I'm not saying I think Ryan Fitzpatrick is a wizard, even though he looks like one with the beard. I'm not saying he's an amazing quarterback. I'm saying that you should want this guy back on the team as soon as possible. If you think that he should have signed and taken less money, sure, that's one thing. But if the Jets are shrew and they lose Fitzpatrick, because just watch, the New England Patriots, I get that they want to play Jimmy Garoppolo, but this has a Patriots troll written all over it. Brady suspended for the first four games. They're not going to go just one quarterback. I know Ryan Fitzpatrick doesn't want to be a backup, but if he can't get a deal with the Jets, why wouldn't he take a little bit of money just to say, see ya, don't miss me, you will. I can see Fitzpatrick considering that. I can see the Patriots considering that. So Jets fans, take my word. If Ryan Fitzpatrick is not under center for week one, you're going to have a problem. You're going to have a bad time. Let's leave it at that. And not only, the other dark side of all of this is that if Fitzpatrick does get the signing, he does stay with the Jets, at the first sign of struggle, let's say he has another game like he did in Buffalo last year, he's going to get killed. He's going to be like, "Duh, you held out, duh." Jets fans are going to go crazy. It's a bad situation up and down. And they finally had a good one last year. How did you mess this up? You want to say the Jets did the right thing in saving money? We don't have the money. You find a way to make the money. You sign him. He's your quarterback. This has gone on far too long. Fitzpatrick needs to be with the Jets. I got 1 minute left. This has been Sports Talk 1240. Unfortunately, nobody has called. But hopefully in the future, you can call. Or you can call when Eric is on, coming on to the next hour. The last thing I want to say is that the MLB All-Star Game was a total joke. Terry Collins treated it like a joke. He didn't even play his guys. I think the fact that it means for the world, I think the fact that the World Series home field advantage is dependent on it is like the dumbest thing ever. And I think truthfully the All-Star Game has been a joke since interleague play. That's all I got. Eric Getzoff is coming in. You stay with us and you listen to Sports Talk 1240. Have a good night, everybody.
Did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.